Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. With your host, Joe Manko. Yahoo Sports. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Right now.
Hello, soccer fans. Welcome to another episode of the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Lago, editor of the FC Yahoo blog. And joining us today is everyone's favorite blogger, Leander Charlakens.
I'm really pleased to hear you say that, Joe, because my heart is still mending from last week.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're in a right place now, Leander. And also here with me in the Playa Vista podcasting room is Shahan Ahmed and Joey Galino.
Yeah, my heart is broken now. This is I don't know what to do.
You guys are worried about, you know, office relationships, so to speak. I got to be honest, I'm still not over the Clexit myself.
Okay. Well, look, we could talk about Diego Costa being happy and healthy again at Chelsea. If you saw pictures on Twitter, he was hugging his teammates. Or we can talk about Real Madrid's 40-game unbeaten streak coming to a sudden end, or the Bundesliga returning from its winter break. But today, we're going to focus on the U.S. men's national team and the ongoing controversy over the USA's dual national players. Now, if you hadn't heard, the latest firestorm comes from comments made by goalkeeper Tim Howard at MLS Media Day this week here in L.A., where Howard was inevitably asked about his thoughts on former U.S. head coach Jurgen Klinsmann. Howard proceeded to go down the same road where Abby Wambach, Landon Donovan, and new head coach Bruce Arena had gone in regards to Klinsmann's recruitment of dual national players, namely German-born players of American servicemen fathers. Howard seemed to question the patriotic pride of the German-American, saying that he hoped Arena would bring back, quote, this ability to truly believe in the shirt, unquote. Howard also said, I think we lost that a little bit over the last couple of years. Howard went on to say that, quote, Jurgen Klinsmann had a project to unearth talent around the world that had American roots, but having American roots doesn't mean you are passionate about playing for that country, unquote. So Howard has since walked back these remarks, but that didn't stop from one of the German-Americans on the U.S. team, Jermaine Jones, from responding. Jones said, quote, it's dangerous stuff where you have to be careful what you're saying. With all respect for Timmy, I feel it's not if you're half American or full American, it's more what you have in here, unquote, and he tapped his chest. So Leander, you've covered Tim Howard for a long time. He is the elder statesman of the U.S. men's national team and has long been kind of the voice of reason among the players, not to mention a go-to quote for guys like us. How surprising are these comments by Tim Howard?
I was really shocked by them, to be honest, because, I mean, knowing Tim for a pretty long time, he's incredibly cerebral and thoughtful, and he's one of those athletes that, you know, you think could have really been anything in life. I mean, he's that smart and reasoned and just kind of impressive all around. So to hear him say something like that is strange. A few weeks ago, he admitted that he hadn't voted in the presidential election because he's not in the politics, which I thought was a little bit odd. But he's a guy that you just kind of expect better from. And, you know, to not have such an unreasonable and slightly xenophobic take, I mean, it really doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And it, like you alluded to in your introduction, I mean, there's a sense of this kind of creeping into the national team now, where all of a sudden anybody that's not American-born is under suspicion and is sort of guilty until proven innocent of playing just as hard as the American-born guys, which is kind of odd. And as I pointed out in my piece, Howard talks about passion and all of that, but here's a guy who took a year-long sabbatical from the national team, which I think at that point you kind of forfeit your right to judge anybody else on their commitment to the team. I mean, he had every right to take a break. Oh, I certainly have no issues with that, but it's a little bit weird to then go around questioning the motives of other people.
I think the most egregious portion of this argument is we're talking about the children of servicemen abroad. if you're going to, you know, question patriotism, how are you doing it if people who are serving the country and their kids?
Good point.
I mean, that's what I find to be completely ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, beyond that, I think that why would you limit yourself from a national team perspective on in any way? If somebody, you know, it should be decided on the pitch. If these players aren't good enough, then that's fine. They're not going to make the national team. If they are good enough, you want the biggest pool you can possibly get, especially for an emerging power. And then, you know, if you want to look at examples, and there are plenty, but there are a few that will stand out, or stood out for me. And, you know, the Diego Costa thing always comes up because he chose Spain over Brazil, where he was born and where he originally grew up. But there's also, you know, you look at Pepe, Deco, guys that were similar, born in Brazil, ended up in Portugal for a little bit, ended up choosing Portugal. I don't think that anyone in Portugal is upset that Deco came from Brazil or Pepe came from Brazil. These guys are national heroes in Portugal now. And to be honest, I mean, nobody was complaining about Jermaine Jones. Nobody's complaining about Fabian Johnson the last time we were in a World Cup. Or, like, I just don't understand where this is all coming.
That's why it's such a mystery sometimes when you go back and look at how these German Americans have played. You know, is there any basis for these doubts?
I mean, I don't think so. And honestly, I've had a tough time kind of reconciling my own opinions on this matter because I just it makes zero sense to me for some of the reasons you guys talked about. But then I also think I think Jermaine Jones is a good case study because here's a guy who, if I'm not mistaken, you know, tried to play for Germany and wasn't good enough to make Germany. And there's examples of that with, you know, some of these players, that not just Americans that we're talking about, but across the world where they try to make a certain team and maybe they're not good enough to play internationally for that team. But if they do have, you know, that blood in them, if they do have that connection to another country, you know, like I feel like these guys are fighting harder almost than someone who was born and raised in America to make the team because they just want to play. And so they're fighting, you know, their ass off to get on these teams. And in many cases, that makes them more hungry, more committed than someone who was kind of born into, you know, not necessarily, I don't want to call it privilege, but someone who has been, you know, part of that country for their entire life. And, you know, I just think that clouds things a little bit.
I think what I reject right off the bat is this idea that there are different levels of effort that you can give in a game. You know, having played a little myself and still playing very badly over 30 soccer.
Join the club.
You never step on the field and say, oh, well, this isn't my birth country, so I'm only going to give 78% today. Or, you know, this game matters more because of blah, blah, blah. You're always trying your best. And I think for professionals, especially whose livelihood depends on showing the best of themselves every single time they're out, you know, I have a hard time even accepting this idea that they have some kind of dial that they can turn up or down. And just because they were born elsewhere, they're going to turn it down a little bit when the going gets tough with the national team. You know, this idea that Abby Wambach espoused, that she wanted to sit down with these foreign-born national team players and talk to them about how much they love their country, it's kind of this icky resonance with some of the things that we heard during the election where, you know, foreign-born people have to be tested. And full disclosure here, I was born in Holland and I'm in the process of getting my U.S. citizenship, but that they can be tested somehow for their intentions and their love of this country. It all has really unpleasant resonance with some mainstream things that we're starting to see, and the whole thing is just kind of gross.
Yeah, I just want to add on a little bit to what you were saying or touching on. I think some of these comments are kind of grounded in the fact that Tim Howard is getting on in age, and he's he's on in age at this point. I think he's getting to the point where the fringe is where he's about to get pushed out of the national team. And one way for him to possibly stay on is to say, hey, I'm more passionate about this team than the next guy. And I think that, because when he thought about it the next day, he's the one who also brought up, you know, Fabian Johnson and guys like that that have performed for the national team. And he said, no, I'm not talking about those guys in particular. I'm not saying anything about – we just haven't had the right results. We haven't been good enough. And he's saying that it's because these guys aren't playing hard enough, which is ridiculous. We're talking about professional, you know, soccer players that the second the whistle is blown, they're going to do everything they can possibly do to win a game because they're professional athletes. That's what all professional athletes do. Even when they're playing for their country or when they're playing for their club, possibly slightly more for their country.
Do you think these comments stem from the horrible start to World Cup qualifying, the loss to Mexico, and the awful 4-0 loss at Costa Rica? It seems like you could even say that, you know, the German Americans are being made out to be the scapegoat for this bad start. And Jermaine Jones kind of addressed that in his comments. You know, he said, quote, "We played two bad games. Yes, that's a fact. All the criticism that comes from outside, that's good. That's soccer. It has to be like that. But you have to see the bigger picture, and that's the whole team. That's not an American guy and a German-American. The whole team played bad, so that's the fact. To put it on this guy or this guy, I think it's not correct from nobody."
I think there might be an element of it to that, but I also think that, a lot of these guys, the last World Cup, for example, Jermaine Jones had a big part in it. Fabian Johnson had a big part in it. There was a lot of guys who played key roles in that with, you know, Tim Howard. And I'm not saying it was an overwhelming success, but, you know, he blood, sweat, and tears on the pitch and all that with these guys. So I'm not sure that him specifically is scapegoating these guys. And I also don't know if it's – I think this is, like, a much more deeper-rooted thing, and it's come up in the past before these past two World Cup losses. And maybe that's why it's resurfacing. But, you know, stuff like this doesn't really create division. It only amplifies divisions that already exist. And I think that, you know, I'm not sure it goes there, but I do want to touch on something – in terms of, like, who wants it. I want to throw a name out there to you guys. And, you know, a lot of these people who are saying that, oh, these dual nationals, you know, we don't, they're not, maybe not coming out and saying this, but the implication is, like, we don't want you playing for us because you don't love the country as much as this. Let me throw a name at you. Giuseppe Rossi. You wanted him to not play for Italy. You wanted him to play for the United States because he was really good. Some of the very people who are in the U.S., if not in the U.S. player pool, still vocal about the national team. You had no problem with it back then when he was really good. And I just think when FIFA was founded in, like, 1904 or whatever it was, the world was a lot, you know, Leander, you mentioned this in your column, it was a lot less globalized. And we'd all love it if everything could just fit neatly, not just in soccer, but politically and economically. We'd love it if everything could just fit neatly into these national categories. But the fact is, it can't. You know, we live in a globalized world where a lot of people are living abroad and doing these different things. So it's not like you just, you know, everyone can be neatly assigned a group or a country to play in. That's not how it works. I think that, you know, it's sort of become like a transfer market almost in a certain way that, you know, getting players to play for certain countries because you want some of these elite players who could qualify for, you know, dual citizenship. I think that goes back to Rossi, and I'm certainly not saying he's as good as, like, Costa or anybody we've talked about, but I think there's an element to that.
Yeah, before we throw it to Leander to respond, I just want to add, Leander actually has a kid who's, like, eligible for, like, five countries. Isn't that right?
Savior. He's our savior.
Yeah, the U.S., Holland, Belgium, and Spain. But so we'll see which one he chooses. Start your campaigns now.
I already told my son, who's half Filipino, he could play for the Philippine national team probably if he gets... really, if he gets good enough,
and with the expanded field, he'll actually get in.
He's already declined.
He's peaked already.
No, he's already said no. I'm not going to play.
I'm not going to play
for your parents' homeland, which is a little disconcerting. But anyway,
yeah, I think with Rossi, he was American born, and then he defected. So the problem was kind of the opposite. If defecting is the right word, the problem is kind of the opposite, where to the Italians, he was the foreign-born player. And I don't think they had any issues with it. I mean, Jermaine Jones played twice, I think, for Germany before he switched because they had been friendly, so he was allowed to. And, you know, it's really hard to argue that anybody in the U.S. in the last 20 years, if not longer, has played harder for the badge and the jersey and the flag or whatever you want to call it than Jermaine Jones had. And, you know, you talk about globalization, and that's one thing, and I have talked about it, but the other thing is this is the United States. More than any other country in the world, this is a hodgepodge. I mean, if you trace it back far enough, everybody in this country is a dual national, and unless you're Native American. So, you know, this turning inwards, it's just so odd, and it's so un-American. And I think that's why it's so off-putting, and that's why it sounds so off-key, because it's the very essence of what makes this country and what traditionally has made our national team good is now being sort of repudiated in this rush to find scapegoats in this post-Klinsmann era, when that really doesn't seem necessary because the coach got fired. There already is a scapegoat. They've already sort of reset and said it was this guy's fault, whether it really was or not, and I absolutely believe that it was. But it seems like we're sort of in the rebuilding stage now, so I don't really understand why there's a need for this.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the rich history with the national team, with dual nationals. I mean, you can go all the way back to the 1950 World Cup team that upset England 1-0. The guy who scored the goal was Joe Gaetjens, who was Haitian-born. And you can even go back to the 94 squad. You know, Thomas Dooley, who's a defensive midfielder, got his U.S. passport right before USA 94. He ended up playing every single minute of that World Cup. The U.S. made it to the round of 16. He was a valuable member of that team. And he ended up, you know, captaining the U.S. at France 98, which everyone here would like to forget.
Yeah. What are you talking about? I don't know what that is. Stricken from the record.
But he, you know, he was capped 81 times. So there's a rich history, you know, of dual nationals playing key roles for the U.S. men's national team. And as far as, you know, who's played the hardest, who, you know, it is hard to gauge, but having seen much of the, you know, modern U.S. men's national team era, Jay DeMeritt in that Confederations Cup final, or the semifinal against Spain with Onguchi Onyewu, those guys were playing with, like, their hair was on fire. I remember Frankie Hayduk running around for the U.S. playing like a man possessed. So, you know, those guys were American-born. But Jermaine Jones, for me, I've never seen anyone with the U.S. shirt. In that Brazil World Cup, he was easily the best player. Almost to a fault, he was given too much, you know, leeway to do whatever he wanted out of his central midfielder position. But the effort and that guy provided for the team, you can't question his pride. You can't question his patriotism. To see him, the way he played against Portugal, just for one, you know, there was that 15-minute span where it was probably the best soccer the U.S. played the entire time, Brazil. Jermaine Jones was in the middle of that. He was the reason why they were playing so well, because of all the energy, all the passion that he brought. So,
yeah, I just want to say I personally think that Jermaine Jones is 100% correct in responding and being offended by those comments. He has every right to be, based on what you were saying and just based on the fact that he has been working seemingly harder than anyone else. And that's just because that's his style of play. He puts it out on the line. He risks injury. He takes really risky tackles. Just his style of play extends him. You can't really question his effort the way he plays.
Absolutely. And I actually just thought of something that I want to throw out there to you guys. I hadn't considered this before, but now, you know, over the course of the conversation, it just occurred to me. Throughout the history, or the modern history, if you will, of the U.S. men's national team, you know, you go over the coaches who, I mean, pretty much to a man, they were like, okay, let's grow this thing. This talk might be a reaction, a backlash, if you will, to Klinsmann coming in and saying, what you're doing is not good enough. You know, he never missed a chance to trash MLS. He would always talk about how he wanted players playing abroad. You know, there's just basically like he kind of rattled the American identification, so to speak. And I think that maybe Tim Howard and some of these other guys are saying, well, listen, you know, we were actually on a pretty good growth trajectory before you got here. And we're not saying we're perfect, but, you know, you're sitting here talking about how we're doing things wrong, basically. I think maybe some of these guys who've been, you know, putting in all their time and working so hard for the national team are just having this reaction. Like, who are you to say that? You know, let's not get carried away here. You know, I think maybe it's something like that.
Funny thing about that also, I think, is that Klinsmann was constantly trashing MLS. But if you looked at the number of MLS players he used, even before major U.S. national team players like Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore and Clint Dempsey started coming back from Europe, while he was talking about how the best players needed to be in Europe and testing themselves, he was calling up more and more and more MLS players. And if I'm not mistaken, Bob Bradley in 2010 took 4 MLS players to the World Cup, and Jurgen, I think, took 14 in the 2014 World Cup. Two quick notes of trivia. Joe Gaetjens, that Joe mentioned, who scored the U.S. goal at the 1950 World Cup in against England, he wasn't just Haitian-born. I'm pretty sure, I wrote a long article about him once, that he didn't even have an American passport. They just put him on the team. He wasn't even an American. He was Haitian. And the other one, Jermaine Jones, a few years ago, had a tattoo put on his left knee, I believe, of the American flag. And it's on his left knee so that you can see it, even when he has his socks up for his uniform and you know, sort of between his socks and his shorts. You can see that American flag on him. I mean, it's, you know, go ahead and tell me that guy doesn't care about playing for the U.S.
Guys, do you think, do these remarks create a difficult situation for Bruce Arena? I mean, he's trying to lead this team to qualification for Russia 2018. How is this going to be reconciled among the veterans?
No, I personally don't think it has any impact. If you want to play for the U.S., you still want to play for the U.S. That's what you identify. I mean, if that's your path to playing the World Cup and that's the country you identify with, I don't think it changes one bit. I think it puts more pressure on him personally to select the best players possible for the team. And I mean, the U.S. still needs to qualify, so there shouldn't be anything that stops him from looking at the entire pool available to him and picking the absolute best players that he can possibly find.
I'm talking about, so when Jermaine Jones lines up in the starting 11 with Tim Howard, is any of this going to affect the way the guys perform?
I don't think so. I think it's a good point to make, and it's a good question to ask, but I also think that what we're basically asking here is, you know, is he going to deal with a mess? And I think the reason he's here is because everything is a mess. It's not just this, you know, supposed division between some of the players. It's because the team is underperforming. There's all sorts of other things to worry about. And I agree with what Shahan said. It's kind of like, we don't have time to worry about stuff like that. If we want to qualify, as the United States, I'm speaking as one of the players, we want to qualify for the World Cup, I don't care. It's too taxing, physically, emotionally, mentally, for me to worry about where you're from. If you're in the player pool and you're lining up beside me on the field, we got to get this done, because we still have a lot of tricky stuff, you know, to navigate in the CONCACAF qualification. So I don't think that's going to be a huge issue.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a shot coming at Tim Howard, he's going to try and stop it.
Yeah.
If Jermaine Jones is open in the midfield, he's going to try and find him. I don't think he's going to avoid throwing the ball to him. And I don't think Jermaine Jones is going to be like, now I'm going to play terrible. I'm going to play the worst pass I can find now. I'll show you, Tim Howard.
Well, I just don't know why Tim didn't address the real problem, which was Klinsmann. It wasn't the dual nationals. Go back to when that 4-0 loss to Costa Rica, which I think it was the worst game I've ever seen a U.S. men's national team ever play. It was easily John Brooks' worst game. But even if Tim was talking about John Brooks, he wasn't the only player who played horribly that night. Mm-hmm. Everyone played terrible. Michael Bradley was horrible. So, you know, I don't know. You know, why wasn't Klinsmann the target or the focus of Tim Howard's criticism? It's confusing to me why he wouldn't just come out and say what everyone else was saying about Klinsmann, that he had no plan, his promises were unfulfilled.
I think he did say sort of later on in the interview that Klinsmann was kept around for too long, that he didn't believe his contract should have been renewed because he makes a valid point. He said at the club level, you have $150 million to buy new players, but on the national team, the players stay more or less the same. So if you want fresh ideas, you need a new coach. Which I think is valid, but this just kind of adds to the mystery of this whole thing. And maybe he was just being off the cuff. I mean, Timmy has a history of just kind of talking about whatever's in his head, and it's got him into trouble before. But, you know, there's this search for a reason and things to blame and this inquisition into something that seems to have already been resolved. Like I said before, I don't know why they keep questioning themselves.
Yeah, this is probably not the correct reaction on my part, if you could quantify such things. But we, you know, everyone as U.S. soccer fans appreciates what Tim Howard has done and his service and all that. For the first time I can ever recall, when I heard this, it was just so weird, like we've been saying. It made so little sense. I was actually glad that he's getting up there in age and might be phased out soon. And like I said, I'm not sure that's the right reaction to have, but it's just such a weird thing for a guy like that to say, and a weird thing for him to bring up. And if he really believes that, if he really, even a small shred of him, believes what he's saying is true, then, you know, there's no place for that in this team. And it's just, it was weird of him to say, and I feel weird for having that reaction, because I'm not sure we should even be talking about this, but it keeps, like Leander was saying, it keeps being a story because people keep talking about it, and I'm just uncomfortable with that.
Is Tim Howard and everybody just talking about Timmy Chandler? I mean, I mean, let's be serious.
Potentially.
Chandler has had sort of noted commitment issues where, you know, he played for the U.S. for a while, and then he kind of... pretty much said, you know, it's too long a commute, I don't like to fly. And then he was sort of out of the picture for a while, and then he came back, and then he didn't have a very good World Cup. But to circle back to Arena, the first thing he did when he took the job, or retook the job, or however you want to put it, was sort of address that immediately and say, you know, it was misconstrued, blah, 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 which it plainly wasn't. And I know the reporter who did that interview, Doug McIntyre, he's an honest guy, and he would not take things out of context just to sensationalize. I mean, Arena said what he said, but then just as Tim Howard, in walking back his comments, was sort of saying, well, you know, they made interesting headlines out of it, but I didn't really mean it that way. Well, no, actually, the way it reads and the way we heard it, because it's on video, it sounded like that is what you meant. But one of the first things Arena did was sort of disavow his own comments. And then what I thought was really interesting is he went to Europe very quickly after taking the job, and he met with what he said was five players. And, you know, I think he went to Germany and he went to England, I believe. And if you sort of do the math, to get to five players who are in the national team pictures, he would have had to go talk to Fabian Johnson and maybe Timmy Chandler, but John Brooks certainly. But some of those dual nationals he probably already met face-to-face. So I think if there was an issue there, with regards to Arena, he's probably already squashed it. And that really suggests to me that he plans on relying on those guys just as much as Klinsmann did. And he has said that there's not going to be a whole lot of turnover within the team. So I think you're going to see those guys, which makes it all the dumber to come out and say something like that about them.
Guys, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the year ahead for the USMNT and their bid to qualify for Russia 2018. But before we do that, we're going to introduce a new feature. I think the working title is The Break. Well, we can come up with something better.
Yeah, you might need a break from the break pretty soon.
So what we want to do is we want to give one of the guys a chance to riff or rant about a topic for not too long of a time, but Shahan Ahmed's going to be the guinea pig. So
your favorite Yahoo blogger.
So but when we come back, we will talk more USMNT after the break.
On this first ever episode of The Break, this is Shahan Ahmed, and I would like to share a story with you. It was a couple of years ago, the Champions League final was coming up, and I was fortunate enough to sit down and talk to Alessandro Del Piero, and I asked him, who's greater, Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo? And Del Piero gave me an answer that has always stuck with me. He said, when you look at the greatest of all time, and there are different levels, and him being one of the greatest of all times, he said, the level that I'm on, even that level, I'm looking up to the sky, and there's little sliver, and that's where greats like Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi reside. Arguing about which one is better is of no consequence. It doesn't matter. They are the greatest. So while you may prefer Lionel Messi or prefer Cristiano Ronaldo based on what flavor of ice cream you enjoy, the truth is these are two of the greatest. Just appreciate them. And it's not just them. There's players like Zlatan Ibrahimovic who have also been one of the greatest for the past two decades running. To try and compare someone like Zlatan to Cristiano Ronaldo is a waste of really energy and breath. They're both great. All-time great. So ranking Messi first or Zlatan first or Cristiano first, It's really inconsequential. It's a matter of these guys being able to excel at their sport and their practice or their profession, however you want to look at it, at a different level that puts them in comparison with some of the all-time greats. So insulting one to put the other one ahead is really just doesn't make sense. And it took someone like Alessandro Del Piero to show me that.
We are back here in the Playa Vista podcasting room with Leander Sharlakin, Shahan Ahmed, Joey Galino. We're going to continue this discussion on the U.S. men's national team and the year ahead, a crucial year for the U.S. men as they try to qualify for Russia 2018. Currently, right now, there are 32 players in the January camp at Carson, Carson's step-up center with Bruce Arena and his former staff from the Galaxy. The question I'm going to throw out to you guys first, maybe Lander, you take this. Who in the camp deserves a shot beyond this January camp?
Well, I think, you know, you're going to hear this name a lot, and it comes up all the time among the chief list of the list of chief gripes about Jurgen Klinsmann is Benny Failhaber. He's a guy who's been one of the best playmakers, not just in MLS, but sort of in the U.S. pool for a long time. He's a guy who can, you know, he's a real number 10 who can start attacks, who can sort of connect the dots. And Klinsmann just didn't have any use for him. I think that's because Klinsmann liked his midfielders to be really two-way players. And that's why he preferred playing Michael Bradley high up in the midfield than playing an actual number 10. That's why a guy like Mix Diskerud, no matter how many chances he got, never really stuck because he didn't really have the engine to play that kind of role. That's why I think Darlington Nagby hit a little bit of a snag under Klinsmann as well. But Arena has said several times that he thinks what the team was missing was a passer high up in the midfield, which sounds like such a simple thing when you're constructing a team, but it's something that Klinsmann just didn't do. He preferred to play a guy like Clint Dempsey centrally behind the striker, even though he's not really a playmaker. So someone like Failhaber, I think, has a big opportunity here. He's 31 now, which is a shame. Actually, I believe he turns 32 on the day that we're recording this, on Thursday, unless Wikipedia deceives me once again. But so unfortunately, you know, his prime might be a little bit behind him, or he's at the end of it. So that's a shame. But, you know, the World Cup is 18 months away. So there is time for him. But someone like that, I think, could step in and take a big role.
I don't know if the story of this camp is who's back. I mean, there's not like he's bringing, you know, some superstar back or something like that. It's just that the way Bruce Arena has been talking is that, you know, Wando and some of the other players who've been talking about how the camp's going, it's just that he's reinvigorating everybody after all the cloudiness and kind of the darkness. And some of the ways he's doing that is bringing in some of those players who maybe had a chance and didn't get a look under Klinsmann, but, you know, that enthusiasm kind of lights a fire under the Michael Bradleys of the team. And
the one guy I'm gonna that I think deserves a shot, albeit it is a long shot, is Sebastian Legette of the Galaxy. He is a former West Ham product. Full disclosure, he's a Bay Area guy, just like me. But
and a Galaxy guy, that's critical.
He's a Galaxy guy. But Legette could be, down the road, a reliable utility midfielder. So he's really a winger. But when Steven Gerrard was out, which was really Steven Gerrard's Galaxy career when he wasn't playing, Legette was able to, Bruce Arena put him in a central midfield role in Gerrard's spot. So he got to experience what it was like to play in the middle. He did really well. He was more of a deep-lying midfielder. He's more of an attacking midfielder. But he was able to stabilize the Galaxy midfield, which has always been a strength of the team, going back to Juninho and Marcelo Sarvis, a guy named David Beckham. But I think Legette, who has he can be that explosive player on the wing. You know, if Bruce Arena wanted other options, he obviously has better options, but Legette can be at that attacking wing who runs at guys, but he also can be a serviceable central midfielder. Now, is he up to the task for international level? That remains to be seen. I mean, he needs experience, but I think he has the ability to become something of a utility player for Bruce Arena's U.S. Mets national team.
I just have to say, Joe, that's a seriously hipster pick.
Wow. I am probably the furthest thing from being a hipster, being a father of two, bald, and there's no way I can put a man bun on me. So unless you want to pin
the jeans, could always
you
be
want to pin
though.
A tail on a donkey somehow.
He does have a checkered shirt of sorts.
So. Yeah.
You know what? Everyone has one of these shirts around
because
here.
Because it's very in. It's hipster.
Yeah, I try to pick one day where I think people aren't going to wear this shirt, and I walk into our cafeteria, and there are like five other guys wearing this black and white
shirt. A lot of hipsters
shirt.
At Yahoo, apparently.
Yeah.
Starting with Joe Lago.
It's kind of sad.
You set the trend. I don't think you know that.
No, I am not setting any trends. So let's talk about Bruce Arena's to-do list. What do you guys think is the number is at the very top of the things he has to fix for this team?
I think the spirit, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, these guys, they know the situation that they're in. The hex is, it takes place over the course of, what, like a year, but they know that you only have so many opportunities to pick up points, and I think they play Honduras at home next before they go to Panama, and on paper you're like, oh, there's 6 points for the U.S. team, but, you know, Panama held Mexico, which on its home soil, which the United States did not, and Honduras has already won, so you don't have to tell the guys about the urgency. I think they get that. I think that the atmosphere that he's fostering and making people on the team to be happy to play for it again, because I feel like sometimes, and we've talked about this in the past, that under Klinsmann, it was sometimes the enthusiasm might have sapped a little bit for a lot of different reasons. He was very hard on players in certain ways. The formations, there was a lot of inconsistency and stuff like that. So I think Arena is just kind of reestablishing, I don't know if culture is the right word, but like an attitude of enthusiasm is a word that keeps getting brought up by the guys who are in camp. And there's a renewed vigor and spirit to get this thing done, because they realize that while it is an urgent situation, there's still plenty of time to do something about this. So I think that's the big thing.
I did a column on sort of all the things that need to be done, but you can kind of summarize in a sense, and I know this is going to sound weird, but by saying that there's a lot of things that Bruce has to not do. And that's, you know, tinker constantly, not play guys out of position, not constantly, you know, throw everything out and start over. He has the players. He has said, you know, there isn't time to rebuild the team, to start with some radical tactical system. You know, he'll probably just go with a 4-4-2, just sort of basic and simple, and mostly use the players that Klinsmann had with maybe a Failhaber, or if you really want to, a Legette thrown in there as a nod to the to the hipster community at Yahoo.
Hooray but, for hipsters.
Hipsters, sorry. But, you know, it's not, and Arena is quite fond of saying this, you know, it's not that complicated. It's not that difficult. I think he has to settle on the lineup, settle on a system, and that alone would be a drastic departure from the Klinsmann era, where he was constantly experimenting and constantly trying new things and new players and new positions. So just kind of bring back stability and keep it consistent. That's the job, I think.
I agree with you. I think Bruce needs to bring back some pragmatism, and keep it simple. You know, every guy needs to know what his role is, and you didn't know what Klinsmann was gonna bring. You know, the Mexico game was a perfect example where he's trying out this great new formation, and the guys, what, 20, 30 minutes in, Michael Bradley and Jermaine Jones have to go over him and tell him, you know, this isn't working.
Yeah.
So, it really is pretty simple, and Bruce really can't do a whole lot. I mean, this is his player pool. This is going to be his squad. So, I think just delineate, make it clear. These are your roles. This is who's going to play. This is the situation, you know, you're going to be able to play coming off the bench. And I think that alone is going to bring back a level of comfort for these guys, knowing that you're not going to being called in a camp and not knowing what the hell is going to, like, the coach is going to throw at you before you go on the field.
And I think it just real quick at this level, that's extra important because it's important for any manager to have that kind of consistency, no matter what level you're coaching, you're managing at. But when you're an international coach and you only have sporadic, you know, bursts with these players, so to speak, in the calendar, it's really good. And I think Klinsmann suffered from this a little bit. It's really good to have an identified system, to have something that, you know how it's going to be when you come back in, because in a lot of not everybody can be like, Spain, where Barcelona and Real Madrid, a bunch of their national team stalwarts play together on a consistent basis and play against each other. We talked in the first segment, you got a huge player pool now from all sorts of different places where people are playing. So it's important to be able to have that consistency and that assuredness that you know what you're walking into when you come back and rejoin the team after, maybe 2 months away when you're playing for your club.
I think what you guys are trying to say is that the stability needs to return. They need to make America great again, right?
Oh, man.
Ooh. Oh, God, Sean.
Not touching that one.
Are we going to edit that out?
Yeah. Can we edit that out?
So the January camp is going to end with two friendlies, January 29th in San Diego against Serbia, and then February 3rd against Jamaica in Chattanooga, Tennessee. World Cup qualifying doesn't resume until March. The aforementioned Honduras game at home, and then they're on the road at Panama. Guys, before we wrap up this podcast, very simple question. Will United States men's national team qualify for the 2018 World Cup in Russia?
I'll go first. I think absolutely. I think that the way that the hex is stacked, they, if you finish fourth, you get, like Mexico did the last cycle, you're going to play New Zealand, I think, and something like that in a one-off or in a two-leg playoff to get in. So there's too much talent here to not turn this thing around, but it's obviously more compelling and interesting than U.S. fans would like at this point.
I think they qualify for the eighth straight World Cup, which is quite an achievement, mostly because we don't like to admit it, but CONCACAF is a ridiculously easy confederation to qualify from. I mean, from the six teams in the hex, and it's not that hard to get to the hex. Half of them qualify automatically. Like Joey said, the fourth place team goes to an intercontinental playoff, which I believe this time around is against a team from Asia rather than the Oceania team.
You're right. Yeah,
that's right. So the U.S., if they came fourth, they would have to play the fifth place team in Asia. So, chances are that would not be the trickiest assignment in the world. They're dead last at the moment, but there's, they've only played 20% of their games. There's a lot of time left. I think there's an urgency there, but, if you do better than Trinidad and Tobago and either Panama or Honduras, you're sort of back in there. So it's, Panama may have 4 points thus far, but it's pretty doable. There's really no excuse not to qualify, even though those first 6 points were dropped.
Yeah, I think the U.S. qualifies. I don't think it'll be as easy as we might expect. They will bounce back. Bruce will bring them back to a level of competitiveness that we're used to seeing. And we'll all be planning for how we're going to survive a World Cup in Russia, how we're going to cover it. And, yeah, I think that's how he'll be, when December rolls around, we'll be getting ready for who is the U.S. going to draw. And it'll be another group of death.
Yeah. And I also think this is not something that should not be the mindset. I don't think this is what U.S. fans want to hear, but the very good chance that Mexico and Costa Rica, the two teams the U.S. has played, are the two best teams in this particular cycle for the World Cup. So you do have you guys talked about Panama and Honduras and Trinidad and Tobago on paper. Not quite as strong as the United States, you wouldn't think. So there is an element that, the U.S. has already faced maybe the toughest competition it'll have for winning the hex, if you want to call it that, even though the goal is just to qualify.
I think that's it, guys. Another podcast in the books. Please check out all of our musings in the FC Yahoo blog on Yahoo Sports' soccer page. For me, Joe Lago, Leander Charlakins, everyone's favorite blogger, Shahan Ahmed and Joey Galino, this has been the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Goodbye.